Title, Fighting Through Pressures. And these 10 verses in the Gospel of Matthew, the 26th chapter, is a complete rendering of the pressures that Jesus, the Messiah, the Savior, was dealing with. And it gives us as Christians an ideal that if the Son of God, who is God Himself, who has created all of life and who has created the world, and He knows everything in its future and in its past, and Him being God, the very God of God, and also being the Son of God, is facing pressures, who is the best example or the best individual to help us to get through the pressures of life, the stressors of life? And this is to say that He not only was just being God, He had could been God and not felt any of the things that we dealt with, but He also was 100% human. He experienced humanity. That's why He was birthed through the Virgin Mary. But yet He was two natures into this one Godhead. He was 100% God and He was 100% man. And this is the nature that is speaking out to us. He's not being God right now, but He's being human so that He can identify with the things and the pressures of life that we go through, so that we can come to Him at any moment and any time in our life or in the problems that we have, and we can come to Him and He can help us with our things. Now, there's a difference between pressure and stress. The difference between pressure and stress, and I really think that stress is a byproduct of what pressure does. There's a difference what pressure does. Pressure causes stress in our lives. If you could take, for example, if you could take an empty bottle and with the top on it and put your hand on it, and you begin to apply pressure from the top of that bottle and you keep on doing it, sooner or later it folds so much. But the very thing that folds is the weakest point of the pressure that is applied. There's stress being put on that plastic bottle. And the weakest point of that pressure is the thing that will give in first. So there is friction that happens when pressure is applied to us. Stress comes about. And when that comes about, it saps our energy or it attacks us where we are the weakest. And at this moment in Jesus' life, He is undergoing a period of stress. Some examples of stress is it could be job related. It could be relationship related. Relationships in at the point of the stress, the pressure comes in trying to put that wedding together and making sure everything is in its place. And at the same time, making sure you move into the house, you know, right at its perfect time. You're trying to time everything, and sometimes there is a reason behind the pressures that we have. Those reasons that we know about, those are the natural, those are the easy things. Because if we know the reason behind the point of pressure or stress, then we are able to tackle it or to handle it in a way that will relieve us of the pressure so that we won't break so easily. A person can handle stress, as I said, if you know the cause or the reason for that stress. Secondly, a person can bleed or relieve that stress. And third thing, that what can happen, it can strengthen our weakness. Stress pressures strengthens our weakness. And as we will see in the life of Jesus, that this is how He did it. So if we look in verse 36, it says, "Then Jesus went with His disciples to a place called Gethsemane. And He said to them, 'Sit here While I go over there and pray, and it's not unusual for Jesus to be praying. He has been praying his whole life. He has been showing us that at moments and times and at pockets of times, we need to get away and pray. It's not a one-day thing to pray. Every time he performed ministry, every time he healed people and delivered people in certain aspects, he prayed beforehand, he prayed during it, and he prayed afterward. But this is a period toward the end of his life, and he's still praying. What this says to us that in the moment or how we tackle pressure, knowing that there's an assignment or a project that's coming up and you're pulled every which way, you're stretched, and you don't know how to prioritize what you need to do because to you it all seems important. And the first thing that Jesus did, he took his disciples with him to a place called Gethsemane. And he said, sit here while I go over there and pray. First thing you need to do is to tackle pressure is you need to get away from all of life and you find a place to go and pray. You find a place to spend time. And so an interesting thing in verse 37 is that he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him. Now, all of his disciples were there, but he decided to take folks that were a little closer that he presumed understood where he was in the moment of his life that would lead up to his death. And so he took the three closest friends, the trio, Peter, James, and John. Peter, the quick thinking, John, the loving, and just his brother, Zebedee, Peter, James, and John. James didn't say quite much, but he introduced people to the Messiah. He says, come and see. Remember, he first went and he says, come and see a man. Or come and see, we have found the Messiah. Them the three people you want to take with you. Those are the in crowd that you feel that will have the greatest support. So Jesus, out of all 12 of them, he only took three of them because he felt that they had the greatest support of where he was in the period of his life in that moment. And he said to them, he said, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. How do we handle pressures? Is that we sometimes go to those individuals or the person that we know that could be our confidant or that person who has our back or who understands, and we bring them along with something we might be dealing with, the pressure that we might be dealing with. Some of you might be dealing with the pressure of getting the house together. There's a lot of repairs to your home that has to be made. Or you might have a tenant that is tearing up the place. You don't know what to do with the equity. You know there's repairs that need to be made. And this is your home and you allowed it to be rented out. And you're not sure what are you going to do. If you're going to move back in it or if you're going to remodel in some kind of way. You're thinking about the pressure. You got to get to this meeting and this meeting starts at this time, or you're dealing with the pressure of being the only parent raising a child and you have to put the child in daycare and you have to get to work and you have to do overtime to be able to pay for the daycare and all the other expenses that you might have in your life. These are the pressures that come upon us. These are the pressures. There are people that come to you and asking you to take on projects and assignments, and you already are full with your calendar book and you just don't know how to handle this. And he goes and he takes three people with him and he says, I want you to pray with me. He says, sit and watch. Sit and watch means you engage in prayer with me, because this thing that I'm going through, I don't want to go through alone. But I need you to pray with me, Peter, James, and John, because I felt that you got what I was been teaching for all this time. This is Jesus asking. In verse 39, it says, Well, the thing he said, I'm sorrowful, even to the point of death. Now, he wasn't thinking suicidal, but he was, you know, depression, pressures can cause depression. And depression can come so much so to it feels like a death is taking place, or it feels like you're going to die. It feels like the situation is going to take you out of here. But he said, I am so heavy right now to the point that I don't even know if I really want to go through it, or I don't even know if I really want to live. We make those kind of statements, not that we want to do it for real, but we make those kind of statements because of the situation or the detriment of the situation that we're in, and we make those kind of statements. He says, stay here and keep watch with me. Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And as I said, it's not so much more, it's not so much of the final end that Jesus is dealing with. What he's dealing with as being the Son of God, as being God himself, the pressure that was on him was two things. One is that God had never had to die. He was God. And if he's God, he is nothing but life. Life exists in him, and he has given life to us. But he was at the point of like, wow, I am experiencing what man and woman is to experience in this world, that this is a heavy thing. God has never had to die. He can't die, right? But he is such a God that he can be anything and do anything. He's willing to experience this for us. Jesus is in the place of the holies of holies. And he's only got to do this one time. Just like the priest would go into the temple every year, they would slaughter a bullock, a lamb, and he would sprinkle the blood into the holies of holies. That is the most sacred place where God is found, to alleviate the whole community or the people from sin or guilt. And he's in this Garden of Gethsemane as the holies of holies, and he's getting ready to give his life for the world. Second thing about this is not that God never experienced death, but he had to for the first time. And secondly, he'd be separated from his Father. He had to take upon sinful humanity. The guilt of our transgressions, the guilt of what we have done, the guilt and the penalty of sin, of disobedience toward God in the beginning, this weighed on him because he had never experienced being guilt-ridden. He's going to take our guilt. He's going to take it upon him. He's going to say, God, it is me. It is me standing in the place of humanity. I'm going to take away all of their guilt, and I'm going to place it on me. Every criminal, every liar, every backstabber, every whatever, I'm going to take all of that and place it on me. That is pressure, folks. That is a lot of pressure for God, who gives life, to die. Secondly, for him to be acquainted as sinful, to take upon sin and be separated from God. It's a lot of pressure. And none of these disciples that were around him could do anything, because verse 40 says, then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. They are not able to understand the pressures that he's going through. And I want to say to you today that sometimes pressures can cause a breakdown. In the Gospel of Mark, it says that Jesus was under so much pressure that he sweated. It looked like great drops of blood. That's how heavy he was sweating, because he knew he was about to face this Roman trial, and he knew he was about to be put to death by crucifixion. And going into something is pressure. But he shows us how to alleviate pressure. Now, Jesus has been praying. He shows us, if we look in, back in Matthew, if we look back in Matthew, we'll see that Jesus prayed a whole lot. Now, in the 14th chapter of Matthew, when Jesus is walking on the waters, right? It says after he had dismissed his disciples, he went up to a mountainside by himself to pray. There he is. He's praying again in the 14th chapter of Matthew. He dismissed and he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was alone. And he's alone again here in the Garden of Gethsemane. There are some things that you have to do alone. There's some things people can't do it for you. I wish that people could take the APFT for me, but that's something I have to do alone. They can stand by and watch, or they could run with me, but it still end up, I'm doing it alone. But any task that you take that you know is going to cause you great pressure and you don't really know the outcome and it's making you nervous and you want to run from it, the first thing you got to do is get alone and pray. Go to a retreat. Go on a retreat. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. And he's here in the Garden of Gethsemane, scared to death. And yet, as God, he walks on the water. And yet, as God, he can feed 5,000 of folks. And yet, as God, he can tell you what's in your heart. And yet, as God, he healed the lame. He cleansed the leper. He healed the sick. He raised the dead. And yet, he is afraid. In verse 26 of the 14th chapter of Matthew, it goes on to say, when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. He tells the disciples, don't be afraid. And yet he's in Gethsemane, and he's afraid. Some of you are afraid to get close to anyone. You won't let love in. And when somebody overwhelms you with love, you get introverted and you find a way to push that person away. Because the fear overwhelms you so that you are not conscious of really not conscious of that, you're pushing the person away so you can protect the most inmost part of you because you're afraid that it might get hurt again. Some of you have experienced hurt, and yet you hold on to it. And you have to learn how to let go and let God and open up to people who are kind and tenderhearted toward you and to help you. So how do I get over that pressure of pushing people away that really love because I want to protect this inward child of me, or I want to protect something that happened in my past and I just don't want to talk about it and bring it up again. I want to love, but I'm afraid to love and open up. At least I'll let that thing that happened to me in the past come back up again. The first thing you got to do is got to heal that inner child. Everybody has an inner child in them. You got to heal that inner child, and you got to say to yourself, you got to start applying love to your own self before you can allow others to love you, or before you can accept the other person who's showing you love and kindness and overwhelming you with that. The first thing you have to do is you have to love yourself. Love again. Do things that will make you happy. Stop judging yourself. Stop putting judgment on yourself. Get away from the addiction of numbing your feelings. And when you do that, you can't accept the love that somebody is giving you. Open up. He said, and they cried out in fear. And he told them, do not be afraid. It is I. The Lord wants to come in. It is I. Don't be afraid. Open up. It is God sending the person to your in your life to show you what love truly is and how it works. The second thing about the pressure that is on you is that you have to allow the adult in you to develop and manage rejection. Manage that. Manage the loss of rejection. And some people do not love because they feel that if they open up and really give that person their whole inside, they feel that they'll be rejected. You have to manage that fear of rejection. You have to manage that fear of losing. And once you manage that, then you are able to not care whether that person leaves your life or not. You have allowed yourself to come through that fear of being loved, that fear of being there. It's a perfect love cast away all fear. That's in scripture. Perfect love casts out all fear. God is perfect love. And he can cast out all fear, as he just told us. He said, do not be afraid, as he was walking on the water. He said, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. It is I that is allowing you to experience love like you have never experienced before. Don't be afraid. Prayer. Again, is how we fight through pressures in life. Jesus not only prayed one time, but he prayed three times. And that is to show you that consistency in prayer. Sometimes you might have prayed, you said, but nothing happened. But Jesus did it again. He went back a second time. And then when he came back, he found them sleeping. See, it is not for others to pray for you. There is something that you've got to get for yourself. You have to go for yourself. He went back to them, they're fine sleeping. It comes to a point, you got to do this thing, whether you like it or not. And so it shows us that the second time, sometimes we prayed again in life, something, it didn't happen. But the third time, when you pray, that what Jesus did, he accepted it and he went about it and he said, let's go now. He says, for my betrayer is here. And I'd like to leave this with you in the first chapter of the book of James. Jesus was praying. He prayed three times. But each time he walked away from prayer, he had got an answer. He said, not as I will, but as you want it to be. I'm not sure, but God, what you want it to be, then it will be. But in James chapter 1, and we should learn this as we pray, in verse number 6, it says, if any of you lack wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt. Do you get that? But when you ask in prayer, you must believe and not doubt. That means whatever the answer God gives you, you cannot doubt it. If he tells you, no, I'm not going to relieve you of this except you walk through it. Because he wants to build your character. He wants to build your strength in trusting him that he can do the impossible. He wants to build your strength that you can do it. He wants to give you personal confidence. So you might pray and God might give you another answer. You might want this certain answer from God. But he's saying, no, I'm not going to take this away from you except you go through it. So when you ask, believe, he says, and not doubt. That means, when he says, no, don't doubt that it wasn't God. It was God. So when you pray and you find out that God still wants you to do this particular thing, don't doubt. That was his answer. And you will find that God will bless you. And so as I close today, I just want you to know that everybody faced pressures. Jesus has taught us this. And he's taught us that where we need to go and how we need to attack pressures. We need to attack it. One, he got people who would pray with him. Secondly, he got alone and he went to the Father by himself and prayed. And the third thing, after praying those three times consistently, he accepted it. That's how we deal with pressure. Having others to pray with us who we're confident in that they got your back. Secondly, is you do have to get alone and pray by yourself alone. And the third thing, after getting the answer and not doubting, you have to accept that that's what it is and you have to move forward. And Jesus shows us this in the Garden of Gethsemane.